Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Chisa Kores, the chair of the club's Science and Technology member-led forum, and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce my distinguished speaker, Ben Kessira. Ben Kessira is the founder and the managing director of SciArc, a nonprofit engaged in 3D digital preservation of cultural heritage sites worldwide. SciArc's concept stemmed from Ben's work as co-founder and CEO of SciArc Technologies, a San Francisco Bay Area technology company responsible for developing the first fully integrated laser 3D imaging, mapping, modeling, and CAD system. The technology is currently used worldwide in the architectural, engineering, and construction industries, as well as in the automobile, entertainment, and crime forensics fields. Scylla Technology was acquired by Leica Geosystems in 2001. Ben remained on its board of directors through March of 2004. Prior to Scylla Technologies, Ben was CEO at Cigna Corporation, an engineering and construction management firm based in San Francisco Bay Area, which he co-founded in 1973. Under his leadership, Cigna became one of the top 80 engineering companies in the United States. In 1989, Cigna's engineering business was acquired by a major AEC design and construction firm. Ben's activities have also included serving on the University of Illinois President's Council and on the Board of Trustees of the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. Please join me in welcoming Ben Kessira.
Thank you, Chisako. Thank you very much. And good evening, and I'm honored to speak to you tonight, and I want to thank the Commonwealth Club for giving me this opportunity. Before I start, I need to confess that I was surprised that someone was shadowing me tonight. My 14-year-old grandson is going to be giving his class a PowerPoint presentation next week. And being as competitive as he is, he had to come here and discover all my errors so that he can crow about it and remind me. So, Zachary, I'm going to come to your meeting next week. I would like to start my talk with a short story about a little boy whose father was a history buff and who used to take him by the hand to visit the ruins of an ancient metropolis on the outskirts of their town. And they would always stop to visit these huge winged bulls that used to guard the gates of that metropolis. And the little boy used to be scared of these winged bulls, but at the same time, they excited him. And the father used to use these winged bulls to tell the boy stories about that wonderful civilization and their great works. Probably by now you figured out the little boy was me, and the ancient metropolis was Nineveh on the banks of the Tigris River in what's today Mosul in northern Iraq. Let's fast forward to the San Francisco Bay Area many decades later, where I started a technology company, Syra Technologies, that brought the world its first portable 3D laser scanning system with integrated software for visualization and modeling. Let me show you how it works.
Long-range laser scanning works by sending out a pulsed laser beam of light. The system measures the beam's time of flight, recording the time it takes for the light to hit a surface and make its return. With two mirrors, the scanner calculates the beam's horizontal and vertical angles, giving accurate X, Y, and Z coordinates. The point is then recorded into a 3D visualization program. All of this happens in seconds.
Well, as you can see, these systems were able to collect a huge amount of data in a very, very short time. The accuracy of the data collected was in the 2 to 5 millimeter range, and with resolution also in the 2 to 5 millimeter range. To give you a benchmark on that, an experienced surveyor using traditional survey equipment would be hard-pressed to produce more than 500 points in a whole day. These babies would be producing 20, 30,000 points a second. So, as you can imagine, this was a paradigm shift in the survey, construction, and reality capture industries. These systems initially were being used in petrochem plants, refineries, etc., and very quickly they became ubiquitous and started being used in the architectural, engineering, construction industry, in the buildings, airports, highways, bridges, etc., all the way to finally they started being used in the movie industry for virtual sets, as well as for forensics in the reconstruction of crime scene. Syra Technologies got acquired by Leica Geosystems in 2001. And right about that time, a terrible event happened. The wonderful, majestic Buddhas, the 180-foot-tall Buddhas in the Bamiyan Valley of Afghanistan were blown up by the Taliban. And nothing was left. And unfortunately, there was no detailed documentation available. This devastated me, and I couldn't help but think of my old friends, the Winged Bulls, and the fate that awaited them, and the fate of thousands of monuments all over the world. A couple of years before that, my wife and I had started a foundation to do good, and we were so touched by this event that we decided to expand our mission to include the digital preservation of World Heritage Sites. We named the project SIARC, and no, that doesn't stand for the Kasira, the juxtaposition of letters. It stands for Cyber Archive, as in Noah's Ark. Except Noah collected the heritage of his time, and hopefully we'll be collecting the heritage of humanity that we're left with. To date, with the help of a global network of partners, we've been able to digitally preserve approximately 70 projects. And let me show you some of these. Chichen Itza, Rapa Nui, and what you're seeing here is the cloud of points that results from the 3D laser scanning work. Roslyn Chapel of the Da Vinci Code fame in Scotland. Pompeii. Mesa Verde, and I'm showing this to show the power of the this laser technology, where at the bottom here, what you're looking at are 2- and 3-story adobe dwellings sitting under these rock cliffs. So imagine a surveyor trying to measure something like that using manual equipment or traditional equipment. Babylon, that was a project that was very dear to me because I come from that part of the world. But it was challenging, of course, because of the security problems there. Our team, actually, there were more guards protecting our team than we had team members there working. And our team had to, as you can see here, had to wear a bulletproof vest. And, of course, Mount Rushmore, which is one of our latest projects and one of our most challenging projects. As you'll see from these slides, we actually had to develop a special rig to take the scanner and get it up close and personal. Let me tell you a little bit about SciArc. Our mission is the digital preservation of World Heritage Sites using state-of-the-art technologies such as the 3D laser scanning systems and photogrammetry, high-definition digital photography, both for the purpose of producing media and deliverables to help in the conservation of these sites, as well as in dissemination to the public and for education. SciArc acts as the hub for our global network of partners. We typically develop and manage projects. We develop support and funding for these projects, continuing our technology development and integrating technologies is a very important part of what we do, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And, of course, public dissemination of the results and telling the stories that these sites tell us is also an integral part of what we do. And then long-term archiving for future generations, as well as a transfer of technology to locals for sustainability. And again, I'll come back to that and explain that a little further. You heard me mention the term digital preservation, and that's a new term that we coined to describe the process that we follow. If I take all the fancy words off of all the technology and workflow that we follow, at the bottom of it all is the field data collection, where we take 3D scanners and other other tools to the field, including traditional tools where appropriate, and basically digitally document these structures. But at the same time, in the field, we also collect all the available information at the site or with the site managers that would include existing drawings, reports, existing photographs, etc. That makes up, in total, the field data collection. That collected data then is used to do two major processes. One is the conservation part of our work, whereby we use all that data to develop 2D and 3D documentation, and I'll show you some examples of that, as well as provide the sites with site management tools. On the other side, what we call the dissemination part of our workflow, we create from the field data that we collect media and deliverables that we use for K-12 education, higher education, for cultural tourism, and for general public interest. Of course, all of that, all of these developed media and deliverables are all become available on the SciArc website, and at the same time are archived for long-term archiving. You'll notice that we have two additional, words in here and on either side of the process that are integral to our process. One is sustainability, and that is very important to us as to how we continue this work in the future. And again, I will explain that in a little more detail later. Technology innovation is also extremely critical. Our passion is an order of magnitude improvement in productivity, quality, and reliability. And we continue to endeavor to do that through technology, as well as discovering new technologies that would allow us to do even more, such as underwater scanning other radar and other new technologies that would allow us to bring the conservators as well as the public more information, both to enjoy as well as for discovery. So let me show you some examples. We very early on decided to develop a 3D viewer to allow viewing the cloud of points. These, as you can imagine, these clouds of points tend to be very resource intensive, very large files, but we wanted viewers of our website to be able to view these online and in real time. And we were fortunately successful in developing this. As you can see, this viewer allows you to view the cloud of points from different vantage points. It allows you to cut sections through it, whether it's planar or vertical sections. View the structure and the makeup, allows you to take measurements anywhere in the cloud of points. This tool, of course, is extremely valuable in the hands of professionals and conservators and researchers. But imagine it in the hands of young students who would be exploring geometry, trigonometry, math, while without even knowing it, they would be learning about the history of these wonderful sites. And of course, we produce traditional 2D drawings, whether it's sections, elevations, etc. These are used typically by architects, engineers who work on conservation, as well as archaeologists. But these tend to be very labor-intensive because we're extracting them from the cloud of points, and they take a lot of time to for tracing that cloud of points. And part of our innovation has been to try to give conservators even more information, but directly extracted from the cloud of points. And this process that we've developed You see here an elevation of a mission. We render the clutter points with the high-definition photography that we take in the field. And then we project it into 2D views, again, whether it's plan views or elevations or sections, thereby giving these professionals what might look like a photograph, but that is fully dimensioned down to the accuracy of the clutter points. So imagine the detail you get with an elevation like this versus the detail you get with the hand-drawn conventional drawings. This allows us to bring down the cost of producing these deliverables. We can typically cut the cost by 60 to 80% by automating the process. And, of course, we use the clutter points to allow viewing an entire site via fly-throughs in here. You're looking at the clutter points of Tikal. The majority of the site is shown here. So this is millions and millions of points that were extracted using the 3D scanning. And here, it's the same clutter points, but rendered with the high-definition photography that we take at the site to give it more of a photorealistic look. Now, a lot of people, when they see it at first, they think this is a video shot from a helicopter, but in reality, this is the clutter points and it's just being rotated through a computer program to create any number of scenarios of fly-throughs. In addition, the clutter points can be used to develop highly detailed and highly rendered 3D models. And here you're looking at a 3D model of a castle in Scotland. And these models are used to for conservation work, for visualization, as well as for cultural tourism, and also for education. This happens to be the Stirling Castle for any of you who have visited Scotland. In addition, and speaking of education, the SIARC website has significant resources in there, all the way from lesson plans to videos that tell stories, etc. And again, catering to the new generation who seldom open books to read about anything anymore. We now put a lot of our content in mobile apps that you can download on your iPhone or iPad. These are four mobile apps that we have today. You can download them from the App Store. I will typically... we see them as either allowing people before they go to a site to enjoy looking at the site, investigating it, and planning their trip, or else at the site, using them in lieu of the traditional sets that you rent and drag with you to specific stations to listen to the descriptions. Let me show you an example in here of the San Antonio missions. So this app, once you enter, and let me stop this for a minute, you get an interactive map of the site. In this case, we did the digital preservation of four missions and an aqueduct in Texas. So it allows you to determine which mission you want to go to. And once you've decided on that, then you enter into that mission, and it gives you a plan, and this is fully interactive, and I'm not doing it justice here because I don't have a live connection, but you see a plan of that mission site, and you have hotspots that then can lead you to specific areas of interest to go visit. In this case, we're going to be...
Gaze at the intricate carving surrounding the entrance of Mission San Jose, the Queen of the Missions. Share in the wonder expressed by Father Juan Morphy in 1778.
No one could have imagined that there were such good artists in so desolate a place.
And yet today, we do not know the names of the artisans who produced these works of art. As with much of ancient art, they expressed strong, significant symbolism.
A Franciscan for a San Antonio mission was a spiritual leader, a teacher, a community leader. He taught Latin, Spanish, and Catholicism. He showed the mission Indians how to make simple tools and musical instruments. He hired masters to teach them a trade, how to grow crops, design irrigation.
So let me just point out here that...
Masters to teach them a trade.
This is fully interactive. You're seeing a video here, but you can select where to go and what to listen to and what to view based on where you are and what your interest is. And then you can see, again, these hotspots that allow you to click on, and they bring in content. In this case, it brings in the scan. What you're seeing is a scan of the dome with a cutout to show how the structure was built. The more I got involved in the heritage field, the more it became clear to me that we're losing the sites and we're losing the stories of these sites actually faster than we can physically preserve them. Of course, earthquakes, natural phenomena takes its tolls, all the way from earthquakes, tornadoes, floods, volcanoes, etc. But unfortunately, human destruction is becoming a bigger and bigger threat, all the way from arson to urban sprawl. And here you're looking at the city of Cairo in the 20s, I believe, and where it is today. Acid rain, not to mention wars and acts of terror. And the more I looked at it, the more it became clear that the rate of human destruction was expanding explosively, almost at the rate of expansion or growth of global population and global industrialization. Looking at this, it became very, I became extremely concerned and in some ways disheartened in that it looked like we're fighting a losing battle. Not only are we losing the sites and the stories they tell, but we're actually losing a very precious portion of our human collective memory. Imagine us, the human race, not knowing where we came from. Now, fortunately, the last 3 or 4 decades, we've had significant development in digital technologies that has allowed us to put together tools and systems to allow us to at least rescue some of these sites, albeit digitally. These technologies include the ever more powerful personal computers, ever more powerful 3D graphics hardware, 3D computer CAD programs, of course the 3D laser scanning, high-definition photography, GPS technologies, and not to mention the Internet. However, that seeing that tremendous increase in destruction gave us an increased sense of urgency. And because of that, and to challenge ourselves and challenge our partners, we created the CIARC 500 Challenge. And what it entails is the digital preservation of 500 World Heritage Sites in 5 years. Now, looking at it, it can seem to be daunting. However, we have the technology, and it's scalable. And our network of global partners is expandable, and they are all eager to go do it. However, to me, the 500 is only the first 500. Sustainability is extremely important to us. And in order to create that sustainability, we use the concept of technology centers, whereby we partner with local colleges and universities and technical schools, local to the sites that we work on, get them the equipment, necessary equipment and software, and give them training to empower them to do the digital preservation work with us that would help us in digitally and help them in digitally preserving their heritage sites, while at the same time in enabling them in the future to use this technology not only for heritage preservation, but also in the commercial field to help economically in their communities. Now, in order to create support and funding for the 500, we use the concept of themes. A theme is a collection of projects that are related by geography, history, ethnicity, etc. And I want to show you a few of these themes just to give you an idea of what we've been doing recently. The Scottish Den happens to be one of my very favorite themes. 3 years ago, I was in Scotland and was very fortunate to meet the then Minister of Culture, who was so touched by the 500 that he decided to contribute to the CIARC 500 10 heritage projects. The five UNESCO projects in Scotland, and those of you who are familiar with Scotland will recognize some of them, or maybe all of them. But in addition to the five in Scotland, he agreed, actually offered to contribute another five that would be selected worldwide. The five in Scotland are almost done, and three of the international projects are almost complete. One of them is Mount Rushmore, where a team of Scotland was working with us on that project. Another one in India and in China, and we're looking at a possible project in Japan and possibly in Brazil. These are under discussion now. Another very interesting project and very important project, not only for Mexico in this case, but also for the world. It's the Sacred Cities of Ancient Mexico. And it's a digital preservation of 11 heritage sites. 10 of them are the 10 UNESCO heritage sites in Mexico. The 11th is Monte Albán, which hopefully will be inscribed as a UNESCO heritage site fairly soon. And again, I'm sure many of you here have either visited or are familiar with these sites. This gives you an idea of where the projects are. They're clustered around Mexico City in part and in the Yucatan with one that's up in the north. But as again, as part of our sustainability endeavor, we are creating three technology centers that are located strategically around these sites to help the Mexicans do their own, acquire the technology, and perform their own work there. This is, I'm sure, extremely important for California, the historic El Camino Real theme. It's important for many reasons for us. Not only the 21 missions are located on the El Camino, but also four of the presidios and three pueblos are on that corridor. The way this project got initiated is the state of California is indicated that they want to go to UNESCO and get the El Camino Real inscribed as a UNESCO heritage route. UNESCO has three designations: a cultural heritage site, which is as in Pompeii; a natural heritage site, as in Yosemite; and a route, a heritage route. There are very few heritage routes in the world that have been inscribed, and actually there are none in the United States. So if this gets accepted, this will be the first. And I believe it has a good chance of being accepted. The state of California is funding the Santa Barbara Trust to do the research work on all on the route and all the structures along it, and they've asked us to use our technology to create a website that can be used to house all that initial information and research, and to not only make it available to the public, but to be used with UNESCO to visualize the route and the important sites along it. As you can see, and this is very, very early work that I'm showing you here. It's a work in progress. But as you can see on this map, we have plotted the 28 sites along that corridor. I think of the El Camino as a spine, with each of these sites being hung on that spine. The map that we intend to, interactive map that we intend to produce, would allow the viewer to choose a time interval and see what was done or how it was developing during that time interval. And I'll just show you a couple of examples. And by the way, these time intervals in here are not the final. We selected these for demonstration purposes in discussions with the state. But for example, you can go and say, okay, what was the route? What did it look like in 1769, if you look at the top there? Well, it was all in Baja California. Then you can look at it in 1823. So it's as well as pull in historic maps. What did the 1823 map look like? And on and on. What I want to point out is each of these pins that you see represent the sites. And if you click on them, then you will go into a homepage for that particular site. And initially, during the first phase of our work, it will only have historic photographs and historic information about that site. In second phase, we will actually be scanning each of these 28 sites. Not just scanning them, but we will be performing full-fledged digital preservation on each one of these sites so that we will have the full information available to conservators as well as fourth graders and people who are interested in touring this. Of course, as you all know, the El Camino is along one of the most treacherous parts of the world in terms of earthquakes. And I believe that there's a mandate that by 2017 all of these historic structures need to be earthquake upgraded. So there's going to be a very big need for that detailed information that we will be producing. And just to give you an example, we had already done some work at the Presidio in San Francisco. So the future look of information for these sites will be like this, but much more. And here you're seeing a scan. This is a laser scan of the parts of the Presidio. And I invite you to go to our website, sciarc.org, to see for yourself the breadth and depth of data that the digital preservation process generates. Another very important project is the Japanese American confinement sites. Of course, all of you know this was a very sad thing that happened in our country. It represents a dark period for us. And our government, through the Park Service, has been trying to record that period in detail and bring it back and disseminate it to the public and to the world as a way to honor those who were wrongfully detained. We are currently working with the Park Service on three of the, I believe, 10 sites that are all over the United States. Currently, we're working on Tule Lake, Manzanar, and Topaz. And again, this is work in progress. It's not published yet. But I know this is very important, especially for San Francisco. And we are partnering with partners who have been funded by the Park Service to go out and interview those who have survived that detention, as well as their descendants. And as you can see from the picture on the right, there's very little left at these sites. We were asked to develop 3D virtual models of to represent how these sites may have looked at that time. And with the help of experts and a lot of photographs and other documents, we've been able to reconstruct virtually in 3D some of the, in this case that I'll show you, it's in Manzanar, to reconstruct what the structures looked like, what the environment looked like.
I think I would have to say, when we got off the bus, some people travel by train. We had to take the Greyhound bus, which we thought was great because I had never been beyond that.
So these are the reconstructions that we developed in 3D.
This man came on the bus and he had this, armband. That's an MP. And my God, you know, MP, you think he's in a military uniform, but he wasn't. And he was one of the internees. And he gave us a canvas bag and told us to fill it up. And I was, what for? That was our mattress. We had to fill up our old mattress with hay. And it's kind of like going from a human being to an animal.
It's really a sad story, but it needs to be told, not just in the United States, but to the rest of the world. I'd like to close with a final story. 2 years ago, a partner of ours who works in Africa asked us if we were interested in digitally preserving the Kasubi tombs, which is a UNESCO heritage site in Uganda. Of course, we were delighted to do that. And the work was done, field work was done successfully. And the resulting data and deliverables were archived on the SIARC archive and disseminated worldwide on the SIARC website. Approximately a year ago, we received very sad news. The Kasubi tombs were burned to the ground by suspected arson. A few days later, we got a phone call. Is the data available and can it be used for reconstruction? Of course, we were delighted to say yes. I want to leave you with a final thought. Our heritage is much more than our collective memory. It's our collective treasure. We owe it to our children, our grandchildren, and the generations we will never meet to keep it safe and pass it along. Thank you.
Our thanks to Ben for his comments here today. We would like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with a Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Capturing Ancient Wonders in 3D with Ben Kessira. Now we open the floor to a Q&A. If you have questions, please raise your hand and wait until you have the microphone as we are recording. I'm going to pass around the microphone, okay?
I understand how your technology captures existing structures, but how does it contribute to restoring things that have disappeared, like the Manzanar site that you mentioned?
That's really a very tough challenge for us. What we do is we rely on photographs, on any drawings that are still available, on experts who have studied this type of architecture in other places. In most cases, these kind of buildings tend to repeat in style. And what we do typically, in most cases, the foundation is still there. So we will go and scan the ground and determine where the foundation is, and then build upon that using all of these resources, including experts, to come up with the virtual reconstruction, the 3D virtual reconstruction.
Next question.
Okay. Thank you so much. And I can think of half a dozen questions, but could you briefly describe what would be, say, the average staffing number of people? You go into a project, how long it takes, and roughly how much it costs.
Well, that's just like you and other nonprofit foundations who do wonderful work. We're always also worrying about how much is it going to cost, and where is the money going to come from?
And you accept contributions, right? you accept contributions.
Typically, and this is really the beauty of digital preservation, in that when you contrast it with physical preservation, it is a fraction of the cost. Not that we don't support or encourage physical preservation. At the end of the day, there's nothing like the real thing. But typically, our cost for the field part of it And it depends on the size of the structure. But to give you on an average project, if you take any of the projects that you've seen, on average it might take a week for a group of anywhere, depending on the size, anywhere from 2 to 4 people running 1 to 2 scanners with some additional support from survey teams that support them. To go to some extremes, some of these projects we've had people camped at sites such as Mount Rushmore over 2 weeks. I think it was 14 days, something like that. And we had 4 or 5 scanners and maybe 10 people there. Now, that's not just to scan the mountain itself and the sculpture, but it was to document the entire park, all the buildings, etc. So that's the field work. Then you bring it back, and you have to then extract all the what we call deliverables for conservation, all the drawings and reports, etc., as well as develop all the media that would go for education and cultural tourism and dissemination to the public. I would say an average project today costs maybe somewhere between $40,000 and $70,000 on average. Some will cost $20,000 to $30,000, and some might cost as much as $150,000. But on average, you can think of it that way. And for the value that humanity is getting from that, that's a very small amount of money for having that digital detailed information available for future generations. I couldn't show any additional slides here in the interest of time, but for example, in Austria, there's the Museum of Technology, Ars Electronica Museum, that has a dark room, call it a cave, where they can project the cloud of points in 3D. And you walk in and you can actually walk through some of these monuments right there. So imagine what our grandchildren can do with what hopefully we can leave them in terms of what we're collecting and producing.
Okay, thank you.
Do you ever look below the surface? I believe side scan radar. I remember we were down in Machu Picchu, and they found all of those ruins at Machu Picchu are sitting on spherical boulders to accommodate the earthquakes, I guess.
This is really very interesting. The answer is we have not done it yet, but there is ground-penetrating radar. That's one of the technologies we want to start incorporating. But speaking of these boulders, I was at Monte Albán, I believe, in the area there. I don't know if it's Monte Albán itself or in Mitla in Oaxaca, where we were taken next to one of the ruins there. There was a crypt, underground burial place, and the manager of the site pointed out to us that the roof of that crypt was solid rock slabs. And she said, look here, these slabs are sitting on ball bearings. They're rock balls made of rock to work as ball bearings. And I couldn't believe it. We're now finally doing it with our buildings in San Francisco, putting them on ball bearings. And here it is 500, 800 years ago. These guys knew that you needed that to isolate. That was discovered through excavation, however.
Right. Next question.
My question is, actually similar. Have you ever used your technology to look inside the monuments? For example, the pyramids, if you can find unknown tombs or passageways?
You know, discovery is always extremely important for our partners who we work with, the archaeologists, etc. And the answer is a yes and no. Let me tell you how we've attempted to do it, because the 3D laser scanners today can only see the surface, so they map the surfaces. The technology for ground-penetrating radar is still in its infancy, but hopefully we'll be using more and more of it. However, on a pyramid in fact, I think this was at Monte Alban, we were able to scan the pyramid from outside, and then there were passages that were accessible inside that we were able to scan. And then we composite, we have a methodology to composite and link the inside and the outside and develop a 3D of the whole system. And when we started cutting sections through it, like an MRI, the archaeologists there couldn't believe what they were able to discover through that composite. Now, it's not perfect that allows you to find things that are deeply hidden, but it's a step in that direction. And I hope the technology will take us there someday.
Any other questions?
Yes, you mentioned El Camino de Real, and when we were in Laredo, Mexico last year, we visited the Jesuit mission, and out front is a circle in tile, and it says Índice de El Camino Real. Is that part of your study that you're doing?
I can't resist telling you this little story. So be careful what you ask. Our first two phases of the project are limited to California because that's where the funding is coming from and hopefully will come from. However, in looking at this a few years ago, I discovered really the missions are in Baja California. I was visiting with the director of INAH, the agency in Mexico that controls all of the heritage sites. And Alfonso de Maria was his name, and by the way, they're one of our partners. And I was telling him, I was proud to tell him that we're looking at a possible initiative to do the missions here in California. He was consul general for Mexico in San Francisco, and I thought he'd be delighted. And he said, "What the hell are you talking about, Ben? The missions are not in California. They're in Mexico. They're in Baja." And he sends his assistant to the library and brings this big book. And I swear, when you open it, it opens up like an accordion. And it's a map of Baja with the 40 missions on it. And that's when I said, "My God," especially the Jesuits who happen to be a favorite of mine, how can we ignore that? So hopefully that will be a third phase that we will undertake to be able to tell the whole story. You know, the world is all connected, and you can take little chunks, but ultimately, you know, you develop these chunks, and ultimately you need to connect them. What I discovered attending a little symposium last weekend at Santa Barbara was that, hey, it wasn't just the land route. The maritime route was much more instrumental than the land. And they showed me maps there where, you know, you'd see how the ships, their routes were, and you'd see on the map, you know, here they're coming to Santa Barbara, and El Camino goes like that from Santa Barbara up and down. They come to San Francisco, and El Camino comes up. And we think of this as starting at the bottom and slugging it through. People didn't like to go on land. It was much easier to go by water, and supplies all came on ships. And that we will include in this interactive map that we're creating.
It's really exciting. Okay, we'll take the last question. So did I see our hand somewhere? Oh, we'll take two more questions.
So my question is going to be a bit geeky, but it does speak to cost and complexity.
Say that again.
I'm going to be a bit geeky here, but it speaks to the cost and complexity of your efforts.
Yes.
What's the size of a data set of one of your scans of the cloud, say of the church at Roslyn, for instance?
I don't know Roslyn Chapel, but I can tell you the heads of the presidents at Mount Rushmore. I think that is approximately 3 billion points. 3 billion XYZs, if you want to think of it that way. Some of our projects get up to, the smallest project is in the hundreds of million. You can imagine these scanners are touching the surface, literally today's scanners are touching the surface, the laser beam is touching the surface hundreds of thousand times a second. And each time it touches, it's bringing you an XYZ. And you can get the resolution down to a quarter of an inch. So imagine how many points, if you just scan this wall, how many quarter inch, how many points you're going to get every quarter inch, and then multiply that by, a very large structure. So they are really huge. Our archive today is getting to be, I'm going to ask Liz again, close to
30 terabytes,
and we're not even scratching the surface. We're working with Iron Mountain, if you're familiar with them. They're supporting us in our long-term storage, and we're looking at close to 70, 80 terabytes, in 6 months to a year, the projects that are upcoming.
Okay, last question.
I just had a question about maybe how you see this technology sort of diffusing beyond like the SciArc archive. Because Trimble, right, recently bought SketchUp.
Yes.
The sort of free modeling program that people use to make buildings and put them up on Google Earth.
Yes.
And so a laser scanning company now purchased that. And so you can imagine in the same way that Google had their cars, right, photographing down the streets, that there might be a Trimble car traipsing down the street. Something, if that's something you had any thoughts about. It's a totally different project, but
yes, I think the more these technology companies expand and the more they do, the better it is for heritage and for all of us, because they are bringing competition, thereby improving the product. For us, we're really not in the business of going out and scanning. We do it because. In fact, SciArc itself, we don't even own scanners. We use partners, and a lot of times we'll go to manufacturers and ask them to come out with us on Mount Rushmore, for example. Leica Geosystems came there with two or three of their scanners to help us finish the work. So we really welcome that, and that expansion is wonderful. What we do is somewhat unique, and that is in terms of dissemination to the public, developing the specialized media for education, etc., disseminating to the public and archiving it. And as a matter of fact, happen to receive projects from others who have already scanned them because they want them to be publicly disseminated and housed for long term. And also we're partnering with Google, for example, to give them some of our content to be on Google Maps and Google Earth. So this collaboration and expansion, I think it's wonderful for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben, for sharing your insights this evening, and we also thank the audience here, as well as those listening to this recording. Now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 190th Enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you very much.